The format for this meeting is a 10-minute speaker, our secretary's announcements, a coffee and snack break, and then our main speaker. Our first speaker tonight is Cynthia. Cynthia.
Thank you. And let there be light. I'm Cynthia, alcoholic. And I'm sober today by the grace of God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of you people out there. Let's see. What it was like. My drinking started at a very young age. I started drinking. Actually, I was born with bronchitis, and I got a bottle of cough syrup when I was born. And I drank it. I drank it regularly when I was young to go to sleep. I had bronchitis for the first year of my life, and so I got it all the time. And after that, I had a bottle by my bed, and I used to hit it all the time. I was probably one of the only kids, you know, in the first grade with a hangover. And when I was about 3, my dad used to drink beer, and I used to go and sip it out of his beer glass, and I thought I was so cute, and I wanted to be liked by my dad, and I was cute, you know, so, and I got away with it, so I did that. I remember when I was 5 years old, my parents had a party, and we had to all go, we were locked in the back, we weren't allowed to come out during the party, so I thought I would be really cute. I thought I would just go and mix myself a drink in a little teeny shot glass. You know, I thought it would be really neat. And so I snuck into the kitchen where all the adults were in the living room and the dining room, and we were in the back in the bedrooms. And I snuck into the kitchen, and I poured myself the prettiest drink with green chartreuse and creme de menthe, that green creme de menthe. And it was so pretty, you know. And so I tried to take a sip of it, and it was awful, you know. And my dad caught me, and he said, "Okay, you mixed it. Now you drink it." And I went, "Oh, no." And so I just kind of, like, waited 5 seconds until he got impatient and went to play with his friends, and I went and dumped it in the toilet. But, you know, that was my first experience with mixing my own drinks. But I liked it. You know, I liked the stuff that it came with, the parties and, you know, the people that were laughing and that it was cute. And so I continued to, like, hit off. When I couldn't sleep, I would hit off my codeine cough syrup. And by the time I was 10, I had 3 younger brothers and sisters. And I was 10, and my little sister was just born, and my little brother was 4, and my other little brother was 3. And my parents wanted to go out because we didn't have a lot of money, and they wanted to go out so they would have me babysit. And I thought that because I cleaned the house and went to school and babysit on weekends, that I was an adult, and what all adults did was watch Johnny Carson and drink vodka and orange juice. So when they would go out, every weekend I would mix myself up some vodka and orange juice with my girlfriend. We were in this together. And if my parents got home before Johnny Carson was over, we were in trouble because they would feel the top of the TV to find out if we'd been up, you know, later than we were supposed to be. And finally, you know, about 5 years ago, I told my mom that I used to, you know, steal out of her vodka bottle, and she said, "No, you didn't, because I would know if you did." And I said, "Oh, okay." But, you know, that's really where my drinking started. When I was 14, my father passed away, and things were just upside down in my house. And I started drinking regularly, and by 15, I was a daily drinker. And I continued to drink daily until I quit drinking, and I didn't think people did that. I mean, I didn't think they quit. I thought that people that said they weren't drinking, they just had a couple. You know,
yeah.
I really did. I just thought that's how it went, that, you know, that. And so I went to a shrink finally because my boss said, you know, after I broke my leg in the ocean at 12 o'clock at night swimming with 2 guys I didn't know and ended up like 18 hours later in the hospital, my boss came to me and he said, "You might have a problem. And maybe you should see a shrink." And so I said, okay. So I went to the shrink, and she said to me, Why don't you try to stop drinking? And I said, you know, I really thought I was crazy. I really did. By this time, I was pretty suicidal. I mean, I've been drinking 30 years. And I'd never been sober.
And I didn't think people got sober. I thought what sober was, like I said, people that would just drink on weekends or people that would just, you know, have one or two. And so by this time, I just really thought that's what it was. And so I would go to her weekly, and I would say to her, I would report, well, I only had two or three beers this week, or I only had, you know, like, I only had a little. And so she said, well, you know, my father quit drinking, and he went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I looked at her, and I thought, what are you, nuts? Go to Alcoholics Anonymous? I may be crazy, but I'm not a drunk, you know? So that's how it went. So anyway, I got a boyfriend that was going to make it all better for me. And he said, quit seeing that shrink. She's just messing up your head. Come on with me. I'll take care of you, and we'll, you know, we'll be all right. So I did. I went with him. I quit seeing that shrink. And lo and behold, 6 months later, I was ready. I was fit for Del Amo Hospital. And it was really, she ruined my drinking is what really happened, because I never really thought that people didn't drink before that. And even though I had never been to an AA meeting, I didn't really, I kind of knew somewhere along the line that it was possible to stop drinking by this time. So I went to my girlfriend who had been sober for 8 months, and she looked so good. And I said, I want to go to an AA meeting. And she said, well, if you can be here at this time, blah, 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 blah. And I wasn't the most dependable person when I was drinking, and I wasn't the most dependable person, you know, I'm still not, I guess. But at the time, she wasn't real stable either, and she looked at me and she said, well, if you can be here at this time, blah, blah, blah. And I called her up the day before I was supposed to go with her, and I said, I can't make it because of one reason or another. You know how we do. And she said, well, then just why don't you go check yourself into Del Amo Hospital, into South Bay Hospital. They have an alcohol program. You have good insurance. I mean, at the time, I had 5-week paid vacation, everything from psychiatry to podiatry. And the thing that really drove me nuts is I was driving around in my boyfriend's Porsche. I lived in a 2-bedroom house. I had 2 cars, and I thought that was what it was going to be, that was going to make me all right, and it didn't, and it just floored me, you know, because I came from this place where when I was 10, I got my first bicycle. It was the one that they bought, you know, at the fire station, and we sanded it and painted it, and that was what I got for my birthday, and that's how we kind of grew up. So I thought, well, if I had all this stuff, you know, and I was driving around in a Porsche, and I was living by myself, and I was doing this and that, that I was going to be all right, and it just, it didn't work, you know, and so that kept me going for 30 years, and when it stopped working, it was like, oh, I had no idea what was going to fix it. So anyway, I got to go to Del Amo Hospital, and they told me that I wasn't crazy, that I was just a drunk. But at first, I don't think they believed it, because I had a roommate, and her name was Sharon, and she used to say, oh, my God, I have to be in the room with the banana, you know. I'm the drunk, and she's the banana, you know. So that's kind of how it went for me. It was really tough. The first year was awful for me. For those of you who just got sober, it was torture for me. I used to come in. Some of you guys saw me. I used to come in, and my hair, I mean, I lost so much weight. I weighed 85 pounds out of 6 months of sobriety because I was so unused to being sober. It was so new to me that it was like somebody had just ripped off all my skin, and I walked around so sensitive. I didn't want anybody to hug me. I didn't want to talk to you. My first year birthday, all I could say was thank you and sit down. I used to sit in the corner with like no chairs occupied around me, and I would have my hair would be long and kind of in my face, and I wouldn't wear makeup, and I would have on real, like, sweatshirts and baggy clothes. And thank God for Jay. He always said hello to me, you know. But he didn't try to touch me, you know. That was really nice that he didn't try to touch me. And, and you know, it was, like, people like Jay that kept me coming back. The cute guys in AA, they were the ones that were, like, made it all right for me. I didn't like you gals, and I really didn't like you guys either. And the truth is that by the time I got sober, I didn't like women. I really never liked women that much, and I really didn't like men after that, after my little episode with my broken leg and the guy crawling out of my closet. I didn't know what to do with you guys. So you were all people, and I didn't like you. So after a couple of years of sobriety, well, after the first year of sobriety, I was able to work the steps with my sponsor, and I was able to, you know, and it's funny, too, that boyfriend that I had that was so wonderful that liked me to drive his Porsche around, I used to think he was like a very zen-like person because I would go through my life with him and I would have these ups and these downs and these ups and these downs, and he would just, you know, I'd leave him and I'd come back and he would just be still stable. He would be there, it's okay, honey, you know, and I'd be like very emotional and I'd be crying and he'd say, it's all right, and he didn't get into it with me and he just let me do it, you know. And what I thought was like a spiritual zen-like aura around him actually turned out to be like a heroin-induced social using deal, you know? And I didn't find that out at first. And it's like God puts these people in your life, and you don't know. You just don't know who's there to help you. And it was thank God for him. I still love him today. I still speak with him today. He's still a successful businessman and a successful artist. And he still uses successfully. That's something I lost the knack of doing when I was about 15. I've gotten to work all the steps. Thanks to my sponsors, thanks to you people, and the grace of God. Something happened last weekend. A person showed up on my doorstep that I hadn't seen since I was in my teens. And, you know, what he sat there and did is validate that all the stuff that I thought went on really went on. And it was like, oh, my God. And I thought, you know, that we owed each other amends. And you know, this program is so unique because after the first half hour that he was there, we had just, like, gotten away with our amends, and we'd gotten over them, and we could forgive each other and go on and have a good time for like the rest of the time that he was here. And it's, you know, I don't live like that. I live with my grudges. I live with my pain. I live with my pain and my morose, you know, morbid afterthoughts of what death is, you know. And I didn't even grieve my father's death until I got sober. And I lived that way until I got here, and you guys taught me another way to live. And I really think that I don't know what would have happened if I hadn't come here to AA, but I know I wouldn't, I suspect that I wouldn't have been able to live my life and start a business and have relationships and mend my relationships with my family and forgive my mother and all that, you know, blah, 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 that we get to do here that is the grace of God for me. And I really thank you all for letting me share.
Now I'd like to introduce someone who's very, very special to me. Our main speaker will share his experience, strength, and hope with us. I'd like to introduce Bob A. from Yucca Valley. And he's just very special to me. He's my sponsor, and he's helped me tremendously.
I'm Bob Anderson, an alcoholic. And I want to thank you people for being here tonight. And there's a lot of people I met here that I've known for quite a while. It surprised me to see you here. And, you know, I don't get in the drunkalog too long, but I'll just qualify a little bit, and then we'll go into the message. And I started drinking when I was young. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio, and you bet. Good place to be from. I started drinking when I was real young, 15 years old. I was drinking shot and beers, and I was going to bars, living in bars, and all that. And my dad owned a garage, and I've been an automobile mechanic all my life. So when I was young, I was making money and being able to do the things I wanted to do. There isn't much to talk about as far as the drunkalog goes, but enough to qualify. There's 11 newcomers here. I count newcomers wherever I go, and I counted 11 at least here tonight. And I know that for sure that when I was a newcomer, that I had no idea what I was doing here. I haven't got the slightest idea why I was here, because the things that I heard here, and that didn't jive with my brain at all, because it was all new and it was all something different, you know. And so to appreciate this here life, or why I was here at the time, I just couldn't do it. So I had a sponsor that delivered ice in a joint. He was called the Iceman. His name was Ed Stevens in Cleveland, Ohio. And I used to live in bars all the time. So this one, I lived there, and he got every paycheck I ever knew. And this this life that I had then was no different than anybody else's. I don't think so. When you drink as much alcohol as I've drank, and you'll do the same things I've done, too. And the life that I had was a life that I had to have because I couldn't live in the world I was in, and I didn't know this stuff. And so this here, this coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a lot to talk about. There's an awful lot to talk about. And I think that to be talking about drunkologues and how bad off I was and what I did and all that, I'll just give you a wind-up of what it was to get here. And I traveled with a tough crowd, a motorcycle crowd, and you had to be the man you said you were them days. And this Iceman, he used to deliver ice in there. And as he delivered ice in there, he'd come in the back door and he'd be whistling and happy, you know, and he'd put the ice in the cooler and come around this side, you know, and he'd sit there, and I'd be sitting there and I'd be all shook up, something's wrong, you know, my wife, the job, or something's wrong. And this went on for a period of time. In the meantime, I had been in the Navy, and I had got trouble there. I come out okay, clean and everything, but I had big troubles anywhere I went. And alcohol, at that time, I knew nothing of alcoholism. I knew a great deal about alcohol because I lived with alcohol all the time. And so the life that I had at the time, it started to go to hell real fast. And what by that I meant was I worked hard for dealerships and the line mechanic, and then I got to be service manager, and I lost that. Then I lost my wife, and she left, and so I yelled for help. Now, when I yelled for help, it was this Iceman. And I had known him probably a couple of years at the bars, you know, different places and that. And so this Iceman, now, never once ever said anything to me about AA or anything else, but I heard it through the bartenders and through the joint owners, you know, that I ought to talk to him because he used to be like me and he wasn't like me anymore. So I yelled for help. And when I yelled for help is I lost my job and everything else. And his name was Ed Stevens, and he put me in an Alky hospital back in Cleveland, Ohio. And in them days, how they detoxed you then, why, they put you in what they call a room as a cooler. And the bars on the windows and the doors don't have no knobs on them. The beds are screwed to the floor, and they spread you out and strap you down and fill you full of formaldehyde. I don't know if you know what formaldehyde is, but I do. I know what it is. So that was my introduction, see, to this here business now about Alcoholics Anonymous. I come out of that hospital, went across the street into the basement of a church, and I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And that was back in December 13, 1952. I've been sober over 40 years. Last December was 40 years. Now, you know, believe me, it impresses me, too. It really does. You know, because I didn't come here to stay no 40 years, man. That's for sure. Yeah, when I got here, man, I was really sick. And I mean sick, but I didn't even know it. And this sponsor that I had, well, he was a step man and a God man. And he talked about nothing but the grace of God. And I was the kind of guy, I never gave a desperation prayer to no God at no time. I knew no God. I traveled with people who wouldn't let you talk that way even. So I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And the sponsor I had, he said to me, I lived in an apartment. And he took me out of the apartment, and before he took me out of the apartment and took me to the hospital, he said to me, do you know the difference between crap and ice cream? And I said, I think so. And he said, well, how about eating some ice cream for a change? And so that was an introduction into a life I knew nothing of. Now, I had a wife she was an asthmatic. Every time I'd go in a drunk, I'd come off a drunk, be gone 2 or 3 days, she'd be in a hospital with fire department, doctors, or somebody would put her in the under oxygen and all that. So I had to leave there. I had 3.5 months in Alcoholics Anonymous in Cleveland, Ohio. And my wife got sick, and I had to move until I come out here to California. The next 2.5 years, from this date of December 13, 1952, for the next 2.5 years, I remained the same man sober as I was drunk. And this I knew. I acted the same, I thought the same, I talked the same, I treated people the same, I treated my wife the same, and I never knew what was wrong with me. I just didn't know. I went to meetings, and I have lived in meetings ever since then, and I have been steady in Alcoholics Anonymous, working every day that I could do it, but I never knew what was wrong with me. And I had a hell of a time. I bought a GI house over in Canoga Park in 1954, March 54. And I bought a brand new car, a new Mercury. I worked for Lincoln Mercury over there too. And I had the new car and had the house. I still have the same wife I took through the drinking years. And I still didn't know what was wrong with me because I acted the same way. I couldn't drive my car. I can't work with nobody. I can't, I've got mechanics I work alongside, online mechanics. I can't be with them. I hate their guts. I don't know what's wrong. I want to pick on them. I want to show them how wrong they are. I want to show them how good I can do something instead of what they're doing. I'm talking about the disease of alcoholism. I'm talking about something that's the matter with me. Now, the first 2.5 years, I kept coming to meetings. I kept going to meetings. I lived at meetings. And I got a sponsor now that came out and stayed with me. And he stayed with me maybe a month, maybe 2 months. While he was here with me in Canoga Park, we'd be working steps. He'd be on this side of the table, I'd be on this side of the table. He'd be telling me about this step, and I'd tell him there ain't no damn way I'll ever do that step. And so we're going back and forth all the time. See? And he's trying to teach me, trying to show me, trying to have me do something that I need to do, and I won't do it. I think that it's okay because I'm sober. I'm not drunk. I'm going to work. I got a GI house. I got a new car. I'm buying my clothes. I'm doing everything. But you see, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know why I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. There was a neighbor living next door to me. And in between our two driveways, you know, there's a strip of dirt. So I went ahead and I planted these Dusty Millers. I don't know if you know these Dusty Millers. I planted a whole bunch of them there, you know. And I'm getting them going real good, you know. And I'm, you know, and I got a ratty brain, man. My brain's going all the time, see. And I come home. And I looked there, and there's about 3 of them plants. They got a tire track over them. They run them over. Man, I don't like that. See, and so I go down and buy 3 more, put them in the ground, and about a week later, the whole damn bunch is run over. Every one of them are squashed, you know. And there's nobody home next door. And I'm standing there by the doorway all damn day long, waiting for that guy to come home so I could kill him. And he ran over my flowers, see. And finally, he came home that night. I heard the car door slam. And believe me, I was a bigger guy than that. You go back 40 years, man. I weighed about 240, 250 all the time, and I was strong and tough. I went over there and jerked him out of the car, and I'm going to kill him. I'll throw him against the garage door. And he's hollering, go buy him some flowers. Go buy him some flowers. His wife. The poor guy didn't know it. His wife ran over him, and he didn't even know it. He don't even know what's the matter with me. The disease of alcoholism, I've got a brain that was hurt, it was injured. And what happened to my brain? It happened a long time ago, and I don't know this. I don't know why I'm coming to meetings. I don't know why I'm sitting here going to meetings, and I still can't live in the world that I'm in out there because it's a world I can't live in. It's too much going on. I can't handle it. I can't fight these people. I can't drive my car. Man, I got to drive 2 cars, yours and mine. I can't drive mine by myself. And I don't think there's anything wrong with me. I actually think that it's okay to do stuff like that. If you're sober, going to meetings, what's wrong with that? I just don't understand. I have no knowledge. I have no way of knowing what's going on. Because if you're, like with me, I'm talking about me, only me. I was sober. I knew I was sober. I did not drink. I just didn't drink, period. But I was the same man sober as I was drunk, and it don't make sense. Because if you go to meetings and your sponsor and everybody else says, just get the big book, put the steps in your life, don't drink, you're going to be a winner. You ain't going to be no winner if you're like me, man. There's no way I can be a winner because I can't fit in the world I'm in. I don't know what to do. I just have to get anxious. I get frustrated. I get depressed. I get angry. I want to show you where you're wrong. The steps, though, you know, these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, that's all I talk about all the time. I talk about the steps, and I talk about the power that's in the steps, meaning God, so that I can live in a world that I'm in today, and this world that I'm in is a good world. And I want to talk about this good world. I want to tell you something about the message in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's much more than staying sober. It's much more than coming to meetings like this here. Because if you're like me, and if you go out in that world out there and you run into all kinds of adversity of all types, maybe a divorce, maybe a lawsuit, maybe the IRS, maybe your boss, maybe your wife does this or does that, or somebody does, I go right straight to hell. I just have to hurt people. I have to get hurt when I do this, too. And if Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of recovery, why can't I have a program of recovery? Why do I have to be so damn different? I never knew what was wrong with me. I kept going to meetings, like you're sitting in a meeting right now. When I would leave this meeting, I wouldn't even get a block away. You blow the horn at me, and I'll kill you. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And then by the time I get home, I'm so ratty in my brain, I can't talk to my wife, because I'll treat her the same damn way. And this year now is okay because I'm sober. The message was never delivered. I never heard the message. There might have been said, but I just couldn't hear it. Because there was too many other things in the way. At first, I thought it was a game of winning by possessions. I didn't know. See, I thought that when you buy a GI house, I bought a GI house, it had my name on it. That was 54, March 54. And then I bought a new Mercury right off the showroom floor, brand new Mercury. I worked for the company. I got suits. I have suits. Good clothes. Everything is fine, I think, because I got things that I thought were necessary for my life. But that's not my life, that's living. Because then what I did, I bought motorcycles. I ride bikes. I race student buggies. I got a motorhome. I've got a boat. And I water ski. And I do all kinds of things. That's living. I didn't come here. I didn't know this. But I thought that was part of my life. That when you do this, this will take care of it. This will make you happy, joyous, and free. This is something now that I didn't know nothing about. Because the difference between life and living, life is in here. Living is out there. I don't know how to live in here, but I know how to live out there. And yet, though, the same rat race is going on all the time. I'm still punishing myself. I'm still thinking rotten of you. I look at you and want to criticize you, whoever you are. I don't give a damn who you are. I'll find fault with you. All I have to do is just keep looking at you. I'll find fault with you. You know, this is my mind, see? This is my head. You know, see, now, in page 23 in your big book, it says in there that it would be academic to talk about this if we never took the drink in the first place. So the disease, alcohol, is in my mind, not my body. And then when I got into step one, it says in step one in your big, in the 12x12, it said, glass in hand, I warped my mind. Step two says that I'll admit I'm a problem drinker, but in fact I won't admit I'm mentally ill. And so I started to have to do some things a long time ago because going to meetings was just not right. Because how can I go to meetings like this and I still live with the same brain that brought me here? I'm using that same brain to look at you, and I think it's okay because I'm sober and I'm allowed to do this. But I'm not allowed to do it because these were the same things that kept me drunk. These were the things that I had to live in bars. This here kind of thinking is coming out of my brain. My brain is a power. Now, this power, I never knew this. Nobody would ever tell me this a long time ago. I thought that when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you just go to meetings, sit down like this here, and you're going to be all right. Well, I wasn't all right. But I never knew what it was wrong. I've got a mind that it's been injured. It's hurt. And how it got hurt in the life that I lived. I wanted to live in that world that I was in, and so I did things that I had to do. I had to cheat, lie, steal, fight. I had to take advantage of people, use things, use them, abuse them, take advantage of situations. This doesn't mean when I was flopping drunk. This meant when I was living in a drunken life of living. This here made the character that I am. This character that I am, I brought here. This is the same character they strapped me down in the hospital so that I didn't go into DTs and die. And yet when I got here, I thought that all I had to do is not drink and I can do as I damn please. There's no way I can do this. There's a message here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's all about 12 steps. Now these 12 steps are a method of living. They're not numbers to live by, which I thought that you do. You go out there and you work out. You have to work 3 here and 4 there and 8 there or something like that. No way. What it's about is about a character change. This character here, me. I'm only talking about me. Never do I talk about anybody else. So this means exactly what it says. It's a program of recovery. It's a message. But it's much more than a message because, you see, the message by itself would never do it. There has to be another ingredient. In Alcoholics Anonymous, I found out. I ran 2.5 years under my own steam. I wouldn't even say the Lord's Prayer. I knew no God. I didn't even know how to pray to God. I don't know how to call Him. I don't know how you do it even. There was a man that was an alcoholic up in San Fernando on a Friday night. And this man, I kept watching him. And I talked to him one day, and I said, "What's so damn different about you and me? How come you talk like you talk?" And he's telling me all about the good life. He's telling me about the good days of what went on. He's planting grass, and he's having a ball in life. He wants to talk about it. He's talking about his wife, his kids, vacation. You know what I'm talking about? I'm talking about these guys I work with, how rotten they are. I'm talking about the freeway drivers. I'm talking about the only thing I know to talk about, the crap. That's all I know. That's all I see. That's all I identify with. I asked him, how come you're so damn different? He told me about he had a power in his life, which he called God, that was doing for him what he couldn't do for himself. He said, why don't you try him? He said, whatever you got doesn't seem to be working. Well, see, in them days, you know, it was so true. You know, it was very obvious, you know. You know, I could, you know, I went to San Fernando, you know, years ago at Second McClay, and I'd walk into San Fernando, and all these guys would look at me, and they'd say, look at Anderson, he's at it again. I'd come in, I'm all red-faced, you know. I just got through fighting somebody out there because he didn't drive right, or he didn't put his turn signals on, or something went wrong somewhere, and I can't stand it, see? So it bothers me, and then I never think that there's something wrong with me. I never think that this is the disease of alcoholism. I never thought that there's something wrong with my brain. I never knew that I had to drink because of that. And even, you know, and another thing I found out when I was drinking, I didn't even know this, is that the alcohol that I was drinking was treating my alcoholism because it made the world I was in a world I could be in, because this slowed me down. This made a world that I liked because I could be in do the things I wanted to do. And then this here booze that I was drinking at the time gave me the life that was a damaging life. The character that I built, I didn't build this because of you, whoever you were, my parents or anybody. There's no blame there. I did everything because I wanted to do it. I loved to live like this. I wanted to be in them bars. I wanted to run with them gals. I wanted to drive them bikes. I wanted to have all of these things because it was a world I liked. It wasn't a tough world. It was a good world. You had to pay a price now and then. I used to wake up in hospitals right and left. I always woke up in hospitals, you know, sewing me up, you know, and everything else, broken bones and everything. But I loved it. I loved every minute of it. But I didn't know what happened to me. Here in Alcoholics Anonymous, this man was talking about a power, about a God. So he told me how to pray, what to call him. I had great difficulty at work. I couldn't work with mechanics, these guys with me, because I'm picking on them or fighting. They don't want me near them and everything else like that. And I started using something by my watch, a relationship with a power, with a God. I kept talking to this God about my anger and hostility by my watch, just referring to my watch because I look at my watch because I get paid by the time and when I work on your car. Every time I seen this watch, I would ask God, would you help me again? Would you be with me? I'm sorry I wait for you. I haven't been with you half an hour. I started doing what this Alky told me to do. Start building a life and a relationship with something else other than me. So in a short while, even these guys that I worked with asked me, Anderson, you going to church? And I said, no. And they said, something's happening to you. What was happening to me is that there was something else in my head besides me. I was allowing something else to be there, and this was taking place without even me knowing it. I started going now into the steps. Now, in the step application, before I had a sponsor that taught me steps, I know steps real well. I used to memorize them even. But I couldn't live them. I just couldn't do them. They had nothing to do with my life, not a thing. This time it was a little bit different. I started realizing that there's certain things that I must do for my life, and that means only for me. I had to change this pronoun, this plural pronoun of we, ours, and us, and them, and so on like that, and put it down to a singular pronoun of me, I. So I started having a different kind of a look at everything because in the steps now, when they say I admitted I was powerless over alcohol, that I could agree with 100% because, man, I really hit bottom. I damn near died. I woke up in many, many hospitals. I hit a police cruiser once head on, didn't even know. I went through the windshield and didn't even know what I hit. He made a roadblock. Now, if you drank as much alcohol, you wouldn't have to be an alcoholic. Just drink that much alcohol, you go through the windshield too, see, you know, because you're so numb. But this what I'm talking about isn't in reference to any of them things. What it's in reference to is something that I must do when I come here. This is a program of recovery. This isn't a program of failure. I had a sponsor that told me and showed me right away. This isn't a trial and error program. This is all proven. Can you believe this here, and this blows me away today, is that there's only 12 steps, and they've never been changed. They're still the same set of steps for you, whoever you are, as alcoholics with alcoholism, man or woman, big or small, dumb or smart, anything at all, no qualification. And they'll still treat your alcoholism. But in these steps, though, there's something else that's added. And it was added back in June 10th, 1935, when Dr. Bob's birthday and Bill got together. Because there's always been a power. There's always been a God on this earth. I know that. Even if I didn't have one, I know that it's there. And this here method that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is not a trial and error program. It's a proven thing. But it has a power behind it. Two ingredients. Step two, where it says, I came to believe that a power greater than me is going to restore me to sanity. And I don't even know what them words mean. I don't know what that means in application. I don't know if you do. I didn't know. Because I it was up to me to decide how to think and act in a day I'm in. And I can't do that. That's what I tried to do. I mean well in my head. I really honestly mean well. But I can't do well. It just don't turn out right, see? Because no matter how hard and how sincere I am, I got the disease of alcoholism, and I've got an injured brain, and it's me, and me says, no way you're going to do that, and I don't do it. This here is what I'm talking about now, is the message in Alcoholics Anonymous, so that at least you can hear. I don't know if it does you any good. Maybe I know there's a lot of it that probably won't accept this. There's a lot of alkies around that don't want it. I know I was that way one time. But after a period of time, when I see other people around me have a life that's a good life, where they look in your man's eyes, and you can see in his eyes, you can see love and kindness and consideration. You can see the same man week after week after week. And man, I thought that made you less a man. I thought that everything I did would make me a less a man. If I told you that I need your help to show me something, I thought that I looked bad in your eyes. I've got a mind. I don't know if you have this kind of mind. I got a mind that self-talks. It tells me how to act and what to do. It tells me things and I listen to it, and it's the power of my life, and I do it. And yet I don't think that's alcoholism. I think that's your fault. That's why it turned out wrong. This is the disease of alcoholism. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we come here to spend an hour and a half, say, tonight, and maybe an hour at next meeting or something like that, another hour and a half, and then you go into months, into years, and then my disease of alcoholism has never been treated. It's still grabbing a hold of me. It's still tearing this world up. It's still making me get divorces. It's still turning on people that really love me, really care for me. And I still treat them the same way I always do. Me first, then you come second. But you never come first. You don't ever get ahead of me, man. I'm first. You treat me right, and then I'll treat you right. The disease of alcoholism is what I talk about all the time. Because it's so deadly. It's so hidden. It's so powerful. That you can sit here tonight. I know this for a fact. That you can sit here tonight, and you can listen to me, and your body's here, and all of a sudden, you know where your mind went? I don't know, but it ain't here. It went somewhere. I used to sit there, and I'd poke the guy next to me, and I'd say, this is a hell of a meeting. They don't even read 12 steps here. He said, where have you been? They read that a half an hour ago. You know where I was that half an hour? I was back somewhere doing something that I thought was better and more important than my life here. My life never was important to me, because the message was not there for me. I couldn't change. I couldn't do anything different. I had to sit there, and like you're sitting. When I, you know, we have a, there's a bunch of guys here tonight, even from the Monday night. We have a stag meeting over in Sherman Oaks. And you know, when I start talking about me, I'm only speaking to me. Oh, never do I talk about you. And I'll start telling about things that I do, the things that I have done, how I acted, how I treated a girl, a wife, a girlfriend, somebody. And as I'm doing this, they're getting uncomfortable. They're putting their head down farther, and they're looking here, and they even get body English going, you know, they start turning away from you and all that. Because I'm not talking about them, but I'm talking about me and the disease of alcoholism, and if the shoe fits, you got to wear it, so then if you get upset about it, it's only because it's in you and it's also in me. They don't want to hear this. But see, on Monday night, we talk about it a great deal. The reason we talk about it, because my life is important to me. I don't want to come here and spend an hour and a half here and go out there and have to fight you. I don't want to go out there and hurt people anymore, think rotten thoughts. I got a mind that's so strong, it just tears you apart. It just hurts me something bad. This is the same thing that keeps me awake at nights when I can't go to sleep, thinking about the things that I did in the day I was in, not yesterday, today even. And yet, though, I don't even recognize that, and I won't identify that, and I won't admit it even, that this is the disease of alcoholism and it's not being treated. I'm the same man as I've always been after so many years. That don't make sense. That doesn't make sense. I had this here disease now, is what I'm talking about. It's in me. And I know for sure that this is always alcoholism. This is never alcoholism. You don't treat it and it goes away. There's no way does it go away. This means that the power of self, who I am, the minute I give me the authority, the minute I go to me, self-talk, and I say it's okay to do it, and I do it, I'm in trouble. Because I'm going to do exactly the same thing I've always done. I'm loaded with me. I've got defects of character. I've got ideas. I've got memories. I know how to handle you. I know how to make you jump. I know how to pull strings. I know how to get favors. And when I do this here, this means I'm going to do damage. I'm going to hurt you. There's a program of recovery in two ingredients. What this is, now I have to keep saying this because it's my life like it's your life. This was never a wasn't for me either. I live today only by the grace of God. I live by His word, His power, only because I associate my life here. This is what the steps does. It turns me into a new character by applying and living these steps. Living the steps isn't a numbered form. It's a change of character. I have principles in my life that I've learned in steps. These principles is what guides and directs me. This is what's in my brain today with the power of God backing it up. I can perform today. I can do things today without a memory, without a yesterday, without needing to know what's going to happen the next 2 minutes. I don't call upon the strength of me. I can't do it. This is the message why I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is why I attend meetings, to treat the alcoholism, meaning my mind. I must have this. I have to have this. If I don't have this, what am I going to do? Go back to self? Will I read another book? Can I go to another meeting somewhere? Can I feel good about my character? Can I remain who I am and treat people the same way? Carry a mind full of hate, a mind full of yesterday? Can I do that? No way. No way I can do that. Because this is the same thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. A long time ago, and I still hear it today, that all you have to do is come to AA. All you have to do is don't drink. All you have to do now is get a sponsor. Put the big book in your life. Turn it over. And you're going to be a winner. No way. No way at all. I know this, that meetings like this here does not treat my alcoholism. This is only, I don't speak for AA, I only speak for me. I'm not trying to lay something on you. This is something that I had to have, I had to find, I had to go for it. Because it's the only thing that set me free. Because I kept fooling myself, I kept listening to other people, other alkies. They're telling me that I can do something. There's no way I can do it. I don't have the power to do that. I want to do it, I mean well, but I can't do well. And yet, though, here in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's set in this in step two. It says, I'm going to come to believe in a power that's greater than me to restore me to sanity. I didn't know I was a power, and I didn't know what sanity. I thought insanity meant insanity. It doesn't mean insanity. It means that I can live today without a head full of all of the crap that's there. I don't have to live in my mind full of all the anger and hostility, all the memories of yesterday. Soundness of mind is what they're talking about. They're not talking about sobriety. They're talking about a life that I can have, but first what I must do, I must have an open mind enough to believe that there is something here in Alcoholics Anonymous for me too. Because I'm not you. I don't live in your brain. I didn't come here for you. They didn't strap you down, they strapped me down. And yet I act that way all the time. I act like you should strap me down again sometimes. Because I go out in the world and I act the same damn way. And I think that it's all right, because this is Alcoholics Anonymous and everybody does this as long as you stay sober. There's so much to talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous for me, because it's a message. Why should I spend an hour and a half, or why should I spend a whole day reading all of anything in the big book, 12 by 12, Dr. Tebow and Sermon on the Mount, whatever. Why should I do that and then have to live in a world I can't live in? And yet I haven't got alcohol in me. What's wrong with me? The minute that I started going into steps, step two especially, and to realize that I've been a power all my life, I know what power means, but I don't know what power means to live by it. I don't know what power means when you have to change your thinking, adjust your thinking. I don't know what it means to live in a world that I let you go first instead of me, to be first think of you. I don't know how to do that. I know how to sit here at meetings like this and just rant and rave in my brain or take a trip somewhere. But to listen to something that would save my life, I don't have the power to do that. I don't know how to do that. I think that the speaker up here, whoever it is, man or woman, AA, either one, if they start talking about God, I think there's something wrong with them. What does he need him for? I don't need him. Why does he need him? Just here, believe me, I thought it made you a Jesus freak. I thought there's something wrong with you and you have to do things like that. But you see, I didn't know what I was talking about. I come from a world that didn't do them things. And then when I got in this world, I thought that I could pick and choose and act any way I want to act. And there's a method of living here. There's 12 steps. It's proven. These 12 steps will treat my alcoholism because it's got a power behind it, meaning God, and the method meaning a way of life where I don't have to use or think or be who I am. I can change. I can be on page 63. It says in there that I was reborn. Then I can go to God and ask for to be relieved of the bondage of self. This is what I'm talking about all the time. I'm an alcoholic with alcoholism. I got a mind that can't do any more than what it does. It just won't do it. It hasn't got the capacity to do it. So why can't I have exactly what God wants me to have? It says so in the 12 steps. In step 3, and it says in there that I made a decision to turn my will and life over to care of God as I understood Him. Now you see, you know when I talk like this, a long time ago, when I say words like I say, there's alkies, I know there's alkies around that don't want to hear this. There's no way they want to hear this. Because they think I'm talking about religion, and I am not talking about religion in no sense of the word. But I am talking about something that's necessary for my life so that I can... My life is important to me. Why should I have to go back to the world I come from? Why should I have to hurt people I love? Why should I wind up losing all the time? Can't own anything. Everything I destroy. Friendships. Anything. Relationships. You know, on page 53 in your 12x12, it talks in there that I have the total inability to form a true partnership with another human being. I don't know if you ever read this or not. I read it all the time. You see what they're talking about. Even Dr. Silkworth, right here in the front here, the doctor's opinion, when he talks in there, and he says alcoholics drink for the effect because they're restless, irritable, discontent. I thought that you were restless, irritable, discontent when you're drunk, when you're drinking, when you're drunk in behavior, you're falling down drunk. I thought that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about that. He's talking about a mind that's in my body, the mind that I use sober or drunk, doesn't make no difference, that this mind has an unmanageable life. My life is unmanageable whether I'm in bars or in AA. I'm going to meetings and my life is still going to hell. I'm still punishing people I love. I'm still accusing you, suspicious of you. My mind talks to me, I listen to it, and it tells me all this, and I can't do nothing about it. Why can't I do something about it? You mean to say that when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, that you have to have a life that's still full of the drunken thinking, the bar thinking? You mean to say that after I go to AA for so many years, that I have to be punished? That I have to live in a world that I can't live in? That I have to fight every guy on the freeway? No way. There's got to be something here for me. And what it's about is the message. This message in Alcoholics Anonymous, I talk about it all the time. Because there's 12 steps. Without the 12 steps, there's no message. Meetings won't change me. You can sit here like I did for years. Sit there. You're the same man every time you come through that door as you go back out again. No change. No change of character. Sure, it's nice to be here amongst everybody here. I appreciate it and I'm thankful for it. But that isn't what it's all about. It's not here that I don't have trouble at meetings like this. You know, I have trouble out in that world out there. Why can't I learn how to live in that world like I learned to live here? Why can't I think thoughts out there like I can think them here? It's a problem. It really is a problem. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life a lot of years ago. And during this time, there's a great many things that have taken place. And this here means today, this day today. I live in the day I'm in. And I've been taught this in Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't live because of yesterday or because of tomorrow. I don't bring in yesterday's life and put it in today's life. I don't judge you today because you acted badly yesterday. I don't hold things against you, whoever you are, and keep remembering that and use it against you. This is the disease of alcoholism. That's what it does to me. And I'm sober, and I've been sober years. I look at like my wife. I look at my wife suspicious. I come home because I'm loaded with the day that I'm in. I'm loaded at work. I'm loaded fighting people. And I go home, and I've still got that same thinking going on in my brain. And the next thing you know, I'm looking for trouble. I got a chip on my shoulder again. This is Alcoholics Anonymous, and this is the disease that treats it. And yet I don't think so. I think that I can straighten things out. Tomorrow, I'll do better. Tomorrow, I read, and tomorrow, I'm going to do this tomorrow. But today, I just have to read. Tomorrow gets here, I'm going to read some more. I'm in a rehearsal all the time. The main event goes on, and I never see it. I'm never with it. It's a story of every alcoholic that I've ever been with. Every one of us are thin-skinned. I don't know if you think you are. I know you are if you're an alcoholic with alcoholism. And I know every alcoholic that does not have a program of recovery is a taker. He's not a giver. Or she's not a giver either. They have to be taught. I had to be taught. This is what the steps are all about. This is why it's called a program of recovery. This is why they're not numbered. It's because they're principles. And I had to change the word principle into the word truth so that I can know what a truth is. I don't know what a principle is when I live in the world out there. It happens too fast. I haven't got time to think of what's right and wrong. I just act upon something, hoping that it'll turn out right. I can't remember what page it says down here. It said do it this way or anything else like that. Whenever it happens up there, it's instantly gone. I did it. I did it without even thinking. And yet, though, in Alcoholics Anonymous here, the character that I can change, the character that I can be, doesn't have to worry about the next 2 minutes because I'm not loaded with me. I'm not loaded with the defects of character. I'm not thinking thoughts like I have always thought before. I don't self-talk. I don't tell me how to think about you. I'd sit at meetings like this here, you know, and I'd look around, you know, and I see somebody with a beard. There's one over there. I don't like guys with beards, see, because I don't think he should wear a beard, see. So I got a mind that talks to me. I think, why does he wear a beard? I don't wear one. How come he has to wear one? And then I look at another guy, and he's got an earring in his ear. You know, and I think, what the hell's he got an earring in there for? You know, I don't wear earrings, you know. I self-talk, but I don't identify that as the disease of alcoholism. I don't identify that as something that's going to hurt me and possibly hurt people that I love, people that are close to me. If I don't talk about this, what am I going to talk about? Am I going to tell you how drunk I used to get? I can tell you some stories you won't believe, and they're true. This is not what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. It's all about the message. The message means exactly this. There must be something here for each and every one of us, if you're an alcoholic with alcoholism. So what is it? It's an application. And how to do this application? Now, I'm not going to tell you that since I worked 12 steps, my life's beautiful, and I got this, and I got that, and everything's fine, you know. That's no message. But what would be a message, I believe, though, would be able to identify, at least identify, why the steps are there. Why they're in a logical order form. Why does one go before two? And why do they have to be kept in that direction, that way? Why is one say what it says? Why does it say, I admit I'm powerless over alcohol, dash, that my life's unmanageable? I want to know this. Don't tell me to read that, and don't tell me to put that in my life, because I don't know how to do that. And I wouldn't even begin to know. I wouldn't even know what it means to do it anyway, because when you come from a life that I come from, and when you've been powered by self all the time, how are you going to turn around? How are you going to do something different? This here, you know, I talk a great deal about what I call the ABCs, and ABCs is no more than identifying alcoholism, ego, and self as one person, me, and to see that as what it is, so that when I go to steps. At least when I'm in steps, I know what they're for. They're to treat my alcoholism because they're in a logical order for them to do exactly what it's supposed to do by principle. First, they're numbered so that I won't mix them up. And also, I used to do step one, and I do step 10. One is where I told you I was an alcoholic, and 10, I tell you I was sorry.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fine. That was cool. Uh-huh. A long time ago, you know, I tell you, when I came here, you know, I didn't know what it was to laugh. I didn't know what it was to take your eyes off the floor unless you were drunk, you know. I was a service manager, you know, and before I could have a meeting and I'd have maybe 30, 40 guys there, body shop guys and parts guys and mechanics and all that, I had to be lit. See, I had to have a drink in me, and then I could hold the meeting. Everything would be fine, you know. But if it didn't, then all I could do is just stand like this looking down at the floor, see. Because I had no life of my own. I was always dependent upon the booze, and then I got dependent on people. And I always looked to something else always to fix me, to change me, and everything else. And here in Alcoholics Anonymous, they start right out in step one, where I admit I'm powerless over alcohol, dash, and my life's unmanageable. And I never knew what an unmanageable life was. I don't know if you ever question any of these things or look at any of these things, but I certainly do, and I still do, and I still have to. Because this is all about me, and this is all about my life's important to me, so why can't I have all I can have in the day I'm in? I can. But I must do certain things. And what I must do, I must find out the application of steps and why they're there and the numbered form they're in. In step one, They're talking, you know, they're talking. I'm not going to run you through 12 steps. Don't get worried. But I'm going to start something at least to carry a message, this message. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, see, I don't believe there's any one of us that could ever add anything to 12 steps to make it better, make it quicker, more powerful. And I don't believe you could take anything out of there either to make it different. Because it's in its entirety, it's by itself. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. It treats alcoholism for each and every one of us. I don't give a damn who you are. If you've got alcoholism, the only solution that you're going to have, that's on page 17 in this book right here, too, that we have found a solution which we can agree upon with brotherly and harmonious action. This is the news that this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And that, see, that there is something that must be on all the time. I have to live this way, because this is not a numbered thing, a step numbered thing. And this means, going quick, this means that this here message that I'm talking about all the time, if it isn't delivered, if it isn't presented, I know for sure I couldn't get it out of reading myself. I can read, but I can't read to any purpose. I can't benefit from the reading, because it doesn't change me. And I go to meetings like this, and I learn how to pray to a God. I get on my knees, and it was another man's God even. And even that alone by itself still didn't do anything at all for my life. It was a beginning, it was a start. But what it took, though, it took something that I didn't know. It took two ingredients. It took the 12 steps as a method of living with a power backed up behind, which is step 2 and 3, put the two together, and then I found a way of life in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can do. I can apply this. I can use this. These are principles, the truth. I walk around, and I'm not loaded with me. I'm not walking around with all the anger and all the hostility, all the memories, all the hurts. It's not in my life to do that. I can look with cleaner eyes. I used to tell these guys that I need glasses and hearing aids. I was young then. I didn't need glasses and hearing aids. I'm talking about the disease of alcoholism, how it blinds me, how it changes things so I hear it differently. To talk this way, there's a great amount to talk about. There's so many things that has to be said, but if you don't have a beginning, if you don't have something going for you, if you have to rest upon the fact that you're sober and Alcoholics Anonymous and still fighting the world and eventually you're going to make it, maybe you ain't going to make it. I've had babies that took their own life, drunk and sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. These guys and gals, both of them, one of them, especially one, took his life sober, shot himself right behind the ear with a 32. He wrote a note, and he said in this note, he said, if there is a God in the hereafter, maybe I'll find him there. I can't find him here. Another man took a garden hose and stuck it up his tailpipe. He used to get on his knees and just tears coming out of his eyes. Want me to give him a God, a power, something I can't give me, and he wants me to give it to him. And he killed himself with gas, carbon monoxide. This is a message that I'm talking about. This is a life and death proposition. This is the port of last call. This is prime time. This is all of us, any of us. There's no reason I should wait any longer. Why should I accept a world out there? The same world I had when I was drunk. Why do I hate people out there? I don't need to hate people. I don't have to judge you, criticize you for any reason. This is all about a message. I wish I could tell you myself, specifically, exactly what it is you do in steps that you apply, not to read, not to talk about, but to live with it, to be able to tell another man or a woman, this will save your life. This will make that world out there a world you never lived in. You never knew that world was there. I know I didn't live in that world. I never knew it. But it's there. It's there for me. I know it's there for you. But it's not there because I go to a lot of meetings. It's not there because I get on my knees and pray to God. Sure, I pray to God. I have a living God in my life. I don't have a praying God. I have a God that's with me right now. But I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I learned it by application. Somebody didn't tell me to do that. My Lord says to do that. You stay with me, and I'll take care of you. This is all about what I'm talking about all the time. I learned it in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't learn it in church. This saved my life. It's a message. Now, I don't know what else to say. Because all this here that I'm talking about right now is all about the disease of alcoholism in me. I don't know if it's in you. But I've been this way for a lot of years, only by the grace of God. The undeserved gift from God that he allowed me to have another day with him, and I thank him and praise him for it. That's about it, I guess. You got 9 o'clock, you shut down. I want to thank you for being here tonight. I wish I could do more and tell you an application, because I know for sure that I was so blind at one time, and I don't know how to act. I don't know how to think. I go out there in the world, and I try to figure it out by myself, and I can't figure it out by myself. There is something for all of us, any of us, and this means exactly what step 2 and 3 does. I do believe in a power greater than me, and it's called God, the Lord of my life.